Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And South Carolina is right in our headlamps. South Carolina, the most exciting of all the primaries.
It's the most exciting because it's the next one.
Yes.
Iowa had been the most exciting caucus, and then New Hampshire had been the most exciting primary.
But now we've got South Carolina.
And I am very excited because, as you well know, history buffs, that every winner of the South Carolina primary, Republican side, has gone on to win the nomination.
But every single one, and no other state can make this claim.
No, although they only go back to 1980, that's true.
All right, but they have not only been lucky, they have been the state that triggered the preference for all the rest of the southern states in the Republican primaries, and that's been everybody's route from Ronald Reagan right straight through to George W. Bush. Who will it be this year? Ken.
I think it would be one of the candidates. But I think it's also, if you go back to the history, everybody whose ship was stalled in either Iowa or New Hampshire.
Do ships stall?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
When the ship stalled in like Iowa, New Hampshire, like Bob Dole when he lost New Hampshire, or George
H.W. Bush
when he lost New Hampshire to John McCain in 2000, they've always come back and righted their momentum in a. Yes, you can.
When the momentum has stalled, when the ship has needed to be righted, South Carolina has been right there for the eventual Republican winner.
That's correct.
All right, so who's going to win this year? Ken.
Well, it will not be Rudy Giuliani because he's going to be elected president of Florida.
I think he's got the vote of Florida.
No, I'm not convinced he wins Florida, actually.
On the other hand, you know, Florida was all George W. Bush needed in 2000. So maybe Rudy's on to something. Maybe this is the November of 2000 strategy.
So even if he doesn't win a single primary or caucus, even if he doesn't get the nomination, Rudy Giuliani will become the next president.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
If he can get a 5-4 ruling from the Supreme Court. All right. Who wins South Carolina this year?
I don't know, because, of course, I did think that Barack Obama was going to win New Hampshire, and
so
I was pretty convinced of it.
So did I.
And so did Hillary Clinton, actually.
Absolutely, and so did Bill Clinton. Told a lot of people that.
The polls right now, the polls are a dirty word, as Gerald Ford said during the 76 debates.
76 cost him the presidency.
Exactly. But the polls do say John McCain at this point.
By a lot.
By a few.
And Mike Huckabee is right behind him. Mike Huckabee has a hard base among the evangelical community in South Carolina.
Right.
John McCain's base in South Carolina has never been quite as clear. A lot of military personnel, veterans, a lot of people who are currently in the military. And by and large, they do like John McCain. He's their guy. But is that going to be enough to overcome the evangelical community?
Well, we almost said that 8 years ago when the veterans community was supposed to like John McCain in South Carolina. But some ugly things happened in South Carolina in 2000, as it did in 1980. When George H.W. Bush ran for president in 1980, he wanted to be the alternative to Ronald Reagan, so he tried to cut down John Connally by saying Connally was pro-gay and Connally was paying off black ministers, and it was just really ugly, and of course didn't help Bush at all, but it got Connally out of the race. Connally was gone the day after South Carolina.
That's right. This is more podcast ancient history, perhaps, but John Connally was considered a formidable candidate for president going into the 1980 primaries because people thought Ronald Reagan might be too old and they didn't think George H.W. Bush had what it took.
He was a national front runner for some time. He had tons of money. And then ultimately, it became make or break in South Carolina, which makes me think of what Rudy Giuliani is doing in Florida. Once the national front runner, once the odds-on favorite to win the nomination, and suddenly if he doesn't win in Florida, then there's no argument for his candidacy.
But if Rudy Giuliani's got a make or break primary in Florida, South Carolina's already going to be make or break for another guy who was a little like John Connally in his own right, and that's Fred Thompson. When Thompson was coming into the lists last summer when people were waiting for him to declare, there was this huge feeling that, a little bit like John Connally, he would march right in, capture the imagination of the Republican Party, and sweep to the nominee.
Well, I don't like the fact that we snobby media elites decide who stays and who goes. But look, Fred Thompson's going to have to win somewhere. He even bypassed New Hampshire and, for some extent, Iowa as well, saying that South Carolina is his state. But he hasn't won or placed or showed in any of the contests. You think, well, he has to win somewhere if he's going to win delegates.
And you think he'll be gone if he does not do well in South Carolina.
I think not only if he does not do well, I think he will not do well. But you know something? John McCain's in a tough position as well, even though it's the so-called nominal front runner nationally, I mean, at least in some polls.
He's on top of the polls.
But you know something? Had he beaten Mitt Romney
in Michigan,
that would have been a big, big step for John McCain's possible nomination.
Would have pretty much ended Mitt Romney, would it
not? Well, I don't know if it would have been. No, I don't think it would have been.
He's a home state. He's where he was born and raised.
He has so much money. He could still compete better in February 5th primaries than anybody else. But now that Mitt Romney is still there, What does John McCain do? Even if he loses South Carolina, first of all,
it's big trouble.
His money is drying up, or it's he doesn't. He still trouble. Doesn't have money.
If John McCain loses in South Carolina, and if John McCain also loses in Nevada, which is a very real possibility, yeah, because Mitt Romney looks pretty much in the driver's seat in Nevada. So if it's another winless day for John McCain, it gets to be hard to see where John McCain wins again, except in Arizona on February 5th. He could be shut out in a lot of these other states.
And you know something, the thing we talked about a lot in 2007, way back in the 2007, I know this is so 2007, Mitt Romney may be the front runner for the nomination all over again. He doesn't have to win. He doesn't have to win South Carolina. He doesn't have to win Florida. But if nobody has taken charge of this race, he has the ability on February 5th to run everywhere. And other candidates do not have that ability.
And he doesn't have necessarily to spend a lot of his money, say, in some of those northeastern states where we expect Rudy Giuliani to be strong. They're winner take all. So there's not a whole lot of point in contesting those states. He can concentrate his money on those states where even if he doesn't win, he still gets delegates. And at some juncture here in February, this is going to get to be a delegate count election. And it's not so much a question of each week's what state do you win and which one do you lose. It's a question of who gets to the magic number, which I believe is just a little under 1,200 delegates, to be nominated in the Twin Cities in August.
And if you think of every state that has competed so far, Mitt Romney has finished no less than second. I mean, he hasn't won everything. He's only won Michigan and, thank you, Wyoming. But yeah, but he hasn't finished second.
It's a gold, though. That was a gold for Mitt.
Okay, but so people who don't have to win in South Carolina, it's fair to say, Mitt Romney does not have to win there.
No, he's pretty much decided to go straight from his victory in Michigan to Nevada and then on to Florida.
And although nobody's paying attention to Nevada either on the Republican
on
side,
the Republican
except
side.
For Mitt Romney, who there is a sizable Mormon population there.
So you're just assuming that because there are a lot of Mormons, he's got them well organized and they'll come out, and because it's a caucus system, that'll probably be enough.
Yeah.
So I think Romney gets another gold there. And then he goes on to Florida, and he just doesn't worry about South Carolina.
No, you may not have to worry about Florida either. But before we leave South Carolina, do we want to talk about the ugliness that's going on there with the push polls and the anti-Mormon stuff and the anti-McCain stuff and the what about anti-M?
Well, there's a lot of a sudden surfacing of subsurface campaigning that seems to happen in South Carolina every 4 years. I frankly don't know if it's the state or if it's the media who suddenly discover a lot of nasty campaigning that's going on. I'm talking about anonymous emails, push polls, right, which is where they call you up and tell you it's a pollster, but it's really somebody who's going to tell you a bunch of dirt about another candidate and then ask you if that affects your choice. All that kind of stuff seems to become much more apparent when we get to South Carolina, but I'm actually not sure that it wasn't as common in some other states, but we weren't writing about it. We weren't talking about it.
It's the first real Republican state, and given the fact that it is so influential in determining the Republican nominee, I think this is where they employ their tactics.
This is where the rubber meets the road.
But remember, 8 years ago,
the
black
McCains
baby
had a black baby.
No, a love child.
A love child.
Yeah, the illegitimate
that's
love
right.
child.
And they do, in fact, have a child who is adopted.
Adopted in Bangladesh, Mother Teresa's orphanage, which is much different than an illegitimate black love child. Yes, I would say so. But that stuff is reappearing in South Carolina as we speak.
These other caucuses taking place, as you've said, the same day in Nevada, not a big deal on the Republican side. People kind of conceding it to Mitt Romney. But on the Democratic side, not clear at all. You've got polls showing Barack Obama ahead. You have polls showing Hillary Clinton ahead.
Three-way race.
And you also have polls showing John Edwards still in the hunt, a little bit like Iowa. So why do the Democrats care so much about Nevada when the Republicans don't?
Well, one, first of all, it was organized for them. It was a creation of Harry Reid. They wanted a Western state. They wanted a state with Hispanics, I think a quarter of the vote will be Latino on Saturday.
It's a quarter of the population
is
Latino.
Well, then
and
more,
given that it's concentrated on the Democratic side, it may be a quarter of the vote. Generally, it's only one vote in seven statewide.
And even a week later in South Carolina, there will be a primary where 50% is African American, and many, the Hillary camp perhaps may cede that or expect Barack Obama to win. She would love a win in Nevada to just, you know, going into a state with something under her belt.
On the other hand, if she doesn't win in Nevada, that's not a huge deal. They can blame it on the unions having endorsed Barack Obama at the more or less last moment, or they can blame it on the way the caucuses were organized inside the casinos. It's not a big bruise if Hillary Clinton doesn't win. They could also take this all into South Carolina then, when it all matters a great deal more, because while South Carolina on the Democratic side is not what it was on the Republican side, it could be crucial this year because it's Barack's chance to show that he is now the strongest candidate among African-American voters. He was not before Christmas. Now he's running ahead in the polls. This is a real test of whether that's going to be true on Election Day.
Something happened in the Democratic debate this week that I thought was very interesting.
This was a debate that was held in Las Vegas,
right?
Just with Hillary and Barack and John Edwards, no other Democratic
That's
candidates.
Correct. Dennis Kucinich was expecting to be there.
He was outside in the wings. He was
NBC
batting on the door.
NBC protested in the Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court upheld the NBC exclusion.
Their right to exclude Dennis Kucinich, which is a constitutional right.
Thou shalt not have Kucinich.
That's something like that.
I think that was it. But the ugly sparring between the Obama and Clinton camps on race that started out not as a racist comment by Hillary Clinton, saying that whatever Dr. Martin Luther King may have accomplished with civil rights, it couldn't have happened without Lyndon Johnson. Okay, whatever. That's how it started. And of course, it escalated. But the Hillary Clinton camp has done something with the Billy Sheehan comments from the Bob Johnson of BET comments to remind us that, you know, Hillary Clinton not only is the strongest candidate, but after all, you know, these Republicans, these mean Republicans.
Oh, they're so nasty. They're going to bring up the fact that Barack Obama used drugs in high school.
And just in case they don't, let me remind you that Barack Obama used drugs in high school.
Oh, but all we're really trying to do is tell you what the Republicans
might
do.
Not us, because we're Democrats.
We would never do that, but the Republicans might.
And so when that got so out of hand, somehow the Tuesday night debate in Las Vegas among the Democrats became very tame.
Yeah, it was sort of come to Jesus all of a sudden. Yeah. Let's all kind of get down on our knees and remind ourselves that we're all, in the end, on the same team. Or as Hillary Clinton put it, we are family.
And because we did not want the men to gang up on Hillary, as we learned, because that was the lesson of New Hampshire.
No, they both backed off on that, which they had engaged in the New Hampshire debate with Bill Richardson.
That's
chiming
what I'm saying.
In a little
so
bit.
None of that is happening anymore.
They backed off.
There's no more male ganging up. There's no more. And it seems like, obviously, if you're Barack Obama, if you're John Edwards, and if you're Hillary Clinton, you want to make the case why you're the best candidate for the nomination and to say why your opponents are not. But somehow that's now off limits. You're not allowed to say mean things or nasty things or contrary things because that would not serve the purpose of a Democratic unity.
Do you really think so, or do you think that it's all going to come back? I mean, I expect this to reduce itself to a two-person race after South Carolina. I don't think that John Edwards will win there, even though it's his birth home.
And the only state he won in 2004.
And the only state he won in 2004. So I don't see him winning in South Carolina. And unless he does, this is going to reduce itself to a two-person race. And in that Barack versus Hillary race, I think we're going to have a lot of these conflicts reemerge, where women are asserting that Hillary really should be the nominee because women really deserve to have that glass ceiling broken that she keeps talking about, and where a lot of people are going to say, wait a minute, we've got an excellent, extraordinary black man who is going to be an example, who is going to change the culture because as president he is going to present this whole new image and vision, and you're going to walk away from that just because it's time to have a woman. I think that could get rather nasty as we go forward.
Well, it could, although I would make the case that Barack Obama is not selling himself as a black man. He's selling himself as somebody who could be the uniter that Hillary Clinton could not be, who could bring whites and blacks together, rich and poor together, outside and insiders together, as opposed to Hillary Clinton, where 35 to 45% of the electorate may never vote for her ever.
This is an old problem inside the Democratic Party, group entitlement versus the overall coalition and its strength. This could be the sort of thing that cost the Democrats their momentum and perhaps even their chance, their best opportunity in many years to take the White House back.
Well, ultimately, I think that won't be the case. Ultimately, I think that the Democratic Party is not going to have a hard time uniting behind, I should say against, not so much behind the nominee, but against the Mitt Romney or whoever the Republicans put up.
All right, let's flip that over to the other side of the coin entirely. The Republican National Committee held its winter meeting in Washington, D.C. this week. They had no candidates there talking to them, but that was all that the delegates were talking about, the candidates, and which one of them was going to emerge. They've all seen Huckabee and McCain and Romney win significant events here this month. They don't know who's going to win in South Carolina. They don't know who's going to win in Florida. They don't know if Fred Thompson's going to make a comeback or if Rudy is going to get back into the game. So they're really divided as to where their loyalties are. Well, maybe it's okay, but if the Democrats ought to be worried about unity going down the road, shouldn't the Republicans be lining up behind a candidate by now the way they usually do?
No.
Why not?
It's January, for God's sake.
Well, because you can't have this contest go on forever. And if it doesn't
but it's still
resolve
January.
Itself, If we don't start to resolve this particular problem for the Republicans on the February 5th tsunami Tuesday, if we don't start to get this thing settled down, it could go on all through February and March and April. We get all the way to the April 22nd Pennsylvania primary. Then we might very well get to the convention without a clear front runner and have a multiple ballot convention, which has all kinds of volatile possibilities. We haven't seen a Republican convention go to a second ballot, a third ballot since 1948, 60 years. And there's a reason for that. It's not in the best interest of the party to have that much uncertainty about who their nominee is going to be. I think it's a problem, and I don't think it's too early to call it a problem in January.
As Carl Reiner's wife once said, I'll have what she's having. I would love to smoke what you're smoking. Now, this is going to be over no later than March 1st, which is later than we even thought.
Bill Clinton said the Democrats want to fall in love with their candidate. The Republicans want to fall in line.
As
I
they
think
have
there's real truth.
With Nixon,
real
Reagan, truth. Dole, Bush, right?
Not just truth. I think there is strength in that, because then you pull all of your people together. You get all of your energy concentrated. You don't have everybody pulling in different directions. You want everybody pulling their oar in the same direction. And the sooner that happens, the stronger the candidate. History bears that out. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Look, Wyoming is important. You know that one of those cities created that friendly ghost. I think that was Cheyenne, the friendly ghost.
No, it was Laramie.
Laramie, the friendly ghost. No, Laramie. Yeah,
we can cut this part.
No, I'm not. We're not cutting this part.
We're cutting this.
We are.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
All those.
What if
bad
I have nothing?
Puns.
What if I have nothing
those
this
bad
funny?
Puns come right
what if
out.
I have nothing this funny?
I assume
for the rest
you will
of...
not have anything this funny. It still comes out.
Okay.